It's easy to understand why the disciples were in awe of the temple. It was spectacular, and it was huge. It stood on the highest point in Jerusalem, and it was made of stone, some of which were as large as house trailers. And they were polished white, so that from a distance, Jerusalem looked like a snow-capped mountain. And covered in gold, when the sun struck it just right, it looked as if the sun was sitting atop Jerusalem. And it was huge. There was an outer courtyard and an inner courtyard, and then an outer temple and an inner temple. And not only was the physical size and the grandeur spectacular, it's also what it stood for. The temple was the center of everything. It was the center of political life for the Jews. It was the center of economic life for the Jews. And most importantly, it was the center of religious life for the Jews. It was where God was. And if it wasn't where God lived, it was at least where God connected with humans. I've been told that the Holy of Holies, the center room in the temple, the place where God was believed to be, that housed the Ark of the Covenant, that it was protected by a heavy curtain, and no human went into the Holy of Holies except the high priest, and only once a year the high priest would go into the Holy of Holies and utter the forbidden name of God. And that when the priest did this, he wore a rope around his waist that went outside of the Holy of Holies in case he died in the presence of the Holy, that people outside could pull his body out of the Holy of Holies without becoming in danger themselves by stepping into that divine presence. That's how powerful the presence of God was in that place. And the presence of God and the place of the temple in the mind of Jews. It was where the God that creates the heavens and the earth comes and touches the earth and is present. It was the center of the world. So for these pilgrims coming all the way from Galilee, they've never seen anything so grand and they've never seen anything so important. And as they're leaving the temple on that day, they look at it and they go, Jesus, isn't this something? Look at this. It's amazing. They see the grandeur and everything the temple stands for. And Jesus sees something different. Jesus looks at the temple through a different lens. Jesus looks at the temple through the way in which it has corrupted the life of faith for Jews. The way in which its structures had become oppressive to the ordinary people who couldn't pay the temple taxes, who couldn't make the offerings, for whom religion became a burden. He saw it, and he saw what Jesus saw was the foundations of this whole system were crumbling. And he knew that God's vision for humanity was not centered on the temple. But at the time, the disciples could not see it. Jesus knew that God was going to do something radically different, but it did not fit in the minds of the disciples. All they could see was this grand temple, and it's what has been the center of their world forever. Nothing else can be there. But Jesus knew that the temple wasn't that, and that God's plan was something else and something different, and he knew there was a transition coming, and he knew it was going to hurt like hell. And he knew it was going to feel for the disciples and everyone else like the end of the world. So he tried to prepare them for what was about to come. He said to the disciples, he said, "You see these stones, these huge, amazing stones, a time is going to come when they are going to be toppled down like children's blocks. And it's going to feel like the end of the world." And then what Jesus does, as recorded in this one chapter of Mark's gospel, is he launches into apocalyptic language. After the part that we heard today, he goes on and on to say, it's going to be like this time will come when the stones are going to be toppled to the earth, like children's blocks. And there'll be wars and rumors of wars. And the stars will fall from the heavens. And the sun will go dim. And the moon will turn to blood. He uses this apocalyptic language. It's going to feel like everything is falling apart and falling away. And there are going to be all of these false prophets calling you. Calling you to live out of your fear, to act out of your fear, to do everything you can to fight, to keep the old way in place. There are going to be all of these false prophets. Do not listen to them. When they call you to fight for the old way, run to the hills. And know that God is doing something new. This is only the birth pang. It's going to feel like hell. It's going to hurt like hell. It's going to be as scary as hell. But it's the beginning of something new. Now, to understand what Jesus is saying, it's helpful to put this in the historical context of what happened just a few decades after Jesus said this. Around the time when we believe Mark was writing this gospel. In the year 66, there was a revolt in Jerusalem. The Jews were under a very oppressive occupation from the Roman government. Roman soldiers were filling the streets of Jerusalem. It was horribly oppressive. There were high taxes. And for decades and centuries, the Jews have been like chafing under Roman rule. How dare the Romans invade God's holy city? And there were always pressures to revolt. And in 66, there was finally a revolution, and it was successful. They kicked the Romans out of Jerusalem. Now, they knew that the Romans were going to come back in force, and they came back in force in 68. So the Romans came back with their armies, and then something happened in 68 in Rome that required the generals to go back to Rome. So the armies came, they started to lay siege to Jerusalem, and then they disappeared. And the Jews knew at that moment that their prayers had been answered. Like, God is on their side. Obviously, they kicked the Romans out. The Romans tried to come back. They fled again. So they knew, like, God, they had the momentum of God on their side. And they knew that the Romans likely might try again. But they knew they were on the winning side, right? They had this history that just happened. So in the year 70, the Romans laid siege again, but as they were coming, there was this cry for all of the Jews who lived outside of Jerusalem to come to Jerusalem, to join the fight, to join not just for the fight for Jerusalem, but for the fight for God and God's temple. So Jews from all over came to Jerusalem to protect their way of being and their way of life against the Romans who were amassing like the final battle. And the Jews were slaughtered. For 3 years they were under siege. The Romans laid siege to Jerusalem. And for 3 years, the Jews that listened to the call of the prophet saying, come and protect Jerusalem at all costs, they starved. And the ones that were still alive 3 years later when the Romans breached the walls were slaughtered. And the Romans went to the temple and they burned the foundation. The foundation, much of it was wood. They burned the foundation, and with the foundation gone, the stones of the temple fell. They went into the temple. They desecrated the temple. They desecrated the Holy of Holies. And it felt like the absolute end of the world. Now, what happened as a result of the destruction of the temple was, well, in one sense, it was the end of one world. It was the end of temple-centric Judaism. But two things grew out of the ashes. One was rabbinic Judaism, the Judaism that we have to this day, Judaism that is not dependent on one's ability to get to the temple to connect with God. The other thing that grew out of those ashes was Christianity. Christianity that began as a Jewish sect during the time of the destruction of the temple was still primarily a Jewish sect and was in large part centered in Jerusalem. Christianity grew out of those ashes, and it was as if God was free now. God was no longer bound by geographic location in the temple and in the Holy of Holies, but God and God's Spirit could reach the ends of the earth, that God was freed, and God was doing something new in the destruction of the temple. But for the disciples and for other Jews, they couldn't see it. It felt like the absolute end of the world. It was the end of what they knew. And Jesus, in the 13th chapter of Mark's gospel, is trying to prepare his disciples by saying, something is coming. Something is going to happen. Where the foundations of your entire society, your entire culture, your entire way of being is going to be destroyed. And he uses apocalyptic language. Uses apocalyptic language like the stars are going to fall from the heavens and the moon is going to turn to blood. Apocalyptic language that for most of my life never made sense. It only appears a few times in the Bible. There are a few chapters in the book of Daniel, and then there's this part of the story of Jesus right before his crucifixion in the Synoptic Gospels, and then there's the entire book of Revelation that uses all of this like graphic stars falling from the sky and sun going dim and moon turning to blood, and it never made sense to me. Until it did. Until something happened in my life when the foundations were totally torn apart and my life was falling apart. Moments in our lives like when a loved one dies or we lose our job. Or everything we think or rely on is falling apart, and all of a sudden we hear language about the stars falling from the heavens and the moon turning to blood, and we go, oh, now that's the only thing that makes sense. Now not only do I get it, but that's the language I need to hear, because nothing else expresses my sense of despair more clearly than the stars are falling from the heavens and the moon is turning to blood. Now I get it. And Jesus, in this passage, is not only talking to the disciples about something that is going to happen 30 years in the future, Jesus is talking to us at all times
when we enter that period, when things we are relying on, foundations that we stand on, are no longer stable. And what Jesus is saying in those times are, one, it's going to hurt like hell, and it's going to be really scary. It's going to feel like the stars are falling from the sky and the moon is turning to blood. And there will be prophets that come along, false prophets that call you out of your fear to cling to what used to be, to run back to Jerusalem and fight to keep the old alive. And Jesus says, don't listen to them. The other thing Jesus is saying in this passage is that God is doing something new. Something new is being born here. And you can't see it. There is no way you can know it. You can only trust that God is capable of taking the ashes and the broken pieces and creating something new and spectacular. And you have a choice of either acting like this is the end of the world and operating out of your fear and fighting like hell to cling to the old way, or you have the opportunity, you have the choice of realizing that in times in our past when it felt like the world was falling apart and it felt like a bad ending, it wasn't the end. And that God was doing something new. And the third thing I think Jesus is telling us in passages like this, for times like this, is that we don't know where we're headed. So we can't, like, make the new happen. We need to let go of the old, whatever that is. But the one thing we can do, like, the only thing we know to do is to remember our core values and remember who we are and live out of that. So in times when the stars are falling from the heavens and the moon is turning to blood, the only thing we know to do is to love God and love our neighbors as ourselves and have faith that God is birthing something new out of this difficult time. But not to abandon love. Not to abandon the teachings of Jesus. Not to let go out of fear and turn into monsters. Live our core values, even though it feels like we're dying and we don't know where we're going. Now, for me, I see this playing out in three arenas. One arena is in our individual lives, because we as individual humans all have those times when the rug is pulled out from under us, the foundations are crumbling, someone we love dies, we lose a job, and we don't know. And we can't cling to the old because the old will never be. But we can trust that God will birth something new out of this, that this agony is just the birth pangs of something new. So one arena is the arena of our, like, individual lives. The other arena is the arena of the church. The church, as we have known it, is dying, if not already dead. The church, as an institution, like as the temple building on the hill in Jerusalem, the church, as an institution where people in our culture went to just because that's what one did, is gone. And there is something new
that is trying to be born, and right now we're in the middle of the birth pangs. And we can't cling. We can't cling to what used to be and fight for what used to be because that is gone. And we don't really know what is coming. But what we can do is love God with all our heart and soul and mind and love our neighbors as ourselves. And somehow in doing that, we will find our salvation. And we will participate in whatever it is that God is birthing anew. And then the third arena, of course, is our country. The foundations of which are all crumbling to the ground. And the country that we used to know is no longer here. And I don't think it's coming back. And we can live in fear and despair. We can fight like hell. We can listen to like our fear and live out of our smaller selves in this time of turmoil. Or we can trust that God is faithful as God always has been, and something new will be born out of this. I remember, so in preparation for today, I listened to my sermon from 6 years ago. Apparently, I didn't preach on this 3 years ago, but I preached on it 6 years ago. So I listened to my sermon 6 years ago. In that sermon, I said, as I was talking about sort of our own like fractures in our foundation as a democracy, I said, you know, it's crazy. Like, democracy has worked so well for so long, but we're now at this point where we're realizing that our system has 51% of the people win and 49% of the people lose. And then after that, 49% of the people do all they can to undermine the 51% of the people. And what seemed like a great idea isn't working so well now. And something new, like right now, foundation stones are falling, and it is scary, and it hurts like hell, and we don't know what's coming. And we can give in to those fears and live out of our smaller selves, cling to a past and fight like hell with anyone that might be threatening us, or we can realize that God is calling us to love just as God was calling us to love 10 years ago and 50 years ago. And the only way forward as Christians and as humans is love. And to trust that even though we can't see it, something new is going to be born. That God is at work in the world, even though we can't see it, the same way God has been at work in the world time and time and time and time and time again when social structures had fallen apart. And it was scary. This isn't the first time. It's not the last time. It's not the worst time. It's just our time. And it's our time to have faith that God is God. And even though we can't see the future, that God is doing something. And then we have the opportunity to be part of something spectacular. But we can't if we give into and listen to the false prophets that are stoking our fear and anxiety. Have heart. Have faith. It may feel like the ends of the world as stars are falling from the sky and moon is turning to blood, but this is just the birth pangs of God doing something new in your life, in the church, and in the world.